First time I had an opportunity to meet what Mother Teresa calls the poorest of the poor was in 1987. I was getting involved with a ministry in South India, an orphanage for children, a rural section, quite different than what you saw in that video. But on the way over there, we stopped in Bombay, two men and I who were on our way, and spent a couple of days there, and we hired a taxi one day. And we said, we don't want to see, you know, the Bombay they put on the postcards. Show us the part of Bombay that, you know, the city fathers don't like to talk about. And so this driver took us to an unbelievable place. I mean, I was a newspaper reporter at the time. I once did a 30-part series for the Chicago Tribune on the poor in Chicago. So I thought I knew what poverty was like. And this was a whole different dimension. So you came into this slum, it was lining the streets on both sides. As far as you could see were these cardboard and burlap hovels, cubicles almost, 6 feet by 6 feet roughly, right in the gutter, right where, you know, the buses and the cars would come by and just spew their soot and exhaust right inside them. And as we're driving down the street, I rolled down the window, I had my camera. And you could see into these hovels as we would go by, and most of them were empty, except most, a few had a little cardboard box for a table, maybe a couple had a burlap strip to lay on. But that was it. And the stench of this area was incredible because there was a sewage ditch that ran through it with raw sewage, and there were children running around naked, playing, some in the polluted waters, and there were people without limbs and twisted by polio and deformities on the sidewalks. There were dogs running around that had been scratched. They scratched all their fur off, just pink dogs running around. Mosquitoes and flies and this oppressive smell. And we're driving down this road, and taxi driver said, people here are literally born on the sidewalk and they live their whole life on the sidewalk and they die in the sidewalk. So we're driving along down this and I'm snapping these pictures and hoping that we don't stop, just wanting to get through it. And after a while, the taxi got caught in some traffic and we came to a stop, and as I put the camera down, a face popped into the window right 6 inches from me. A little boy, the same age probably as my son Kyle at the time, about 10 years old. And it just startled me that he was, you know, it's one thing to watch all this through a camera lens, all of a sudden to have a kid right in your face. And his hair was all matted down. He had scabs on his face that were bleeding. He was emaciated. One eye was like half shut and the other eye, you know, just had this vacant look, and he had his hand out and he was mumbling in Hindi or whatever language he was speaking. And it was a monotone. Like there was no emotion. It wasn't like he was mad. It wasn't like he was, after something. It seemed like it was a monotone. Like no hope in this voice. Like he didn't expect anything. And he just, right in my face, and he kept mumbling and mumbling, and I just absolutely froze. I did not know what to do. I was repulsed. I was scared. I mean, I was just feeling all these emotions. And he kept mumbling, saying just in this, and I assume he was asking for coins. I remember somebody telling me, well, you know, if you see a beggar, throw a bunch of coins, you know, a bunch of coins add up to 1 rupee. And so I said to him, I don't have any coins. I don't have any coins. And he just went on and on with this monotone. I said, I don't have any coins. Of course, I had a wallet full of bills, but, you know, those are worth $1.60 each. And so he kept this up, this monotone, and I'm sweating, and I just wanted to get out of there. I wanted to get him out of my face. It seemed like the longest time that I was just going through. No coins. Monotone, talking, mumbling. And then finally the traffic cleared. I said, come on, let's get out of here. And the taxi driver reached back and pushed this kid away from the side of the taxi down to one knee. And we drove away. And I looked back through the rear window. And he got up and he walked into the crowd. And that is the moment that the words of Jesus came into my mind, where Jesus said, whatever you do to the least of the brothers of mine, you are also doing to me. And I wanted to cry. I felt like, you know, I couldn't have helped all those people in that slum. I couldn't have done it. But could I have helped this one kid? I mean, could I got him, you know, some shoes or something? And could I have taken him? He obviously could have used a doctor. Could I have taken him to a doctor? Could I have bought him a meal or something? But I absolutely froze. And I prayed in the back of that taxi on February the 4th, 1987. God, I am so sorry for letting you down. I am so sorry for hoarding the love that you have poured out for me. Just hoarding it. So Father, help me. When I see a little boy like that, help me to see your face on that child. Because I don't want to feel like I feel right now ever again. That episode riveted those words of Christ into me like nothing ever did in my life. And in a lot of ways, that was a turning point in my life. It changed my perspective on a lot of things. And there's no, you know, it's not a coincidence that I went into the ministry that same year. And that seeing that kid and seeing the poorest of the poor just gave me such a love for what Mother Teresa does in Calcutta. Since 1948, nobody ever heard of her in 1948. In an area that Kipling called the Big Stink of Calcutta. It's the name of the subdivision, the Big Stink of Calcutta. It started out one day when she picked up a woman who was in a gutter. She was dying, this woman. She'd been half eaten by ants and by rats. And so Mother Teresa took that body to the hospital. And she said, I'm not going to budge until somebody treats this woman. And then she insisted that the city give her some space to be able to take care of the dying. And they finally did in a Hindu temple. Said, you can take care of the dying here. As a matter of fact, it caused something of a controversy because the Hindus said, well, hey, that's one of our temples. Have a Christian in it. And she said, you know, if you want to do this, that'd be fine. They said, that's all right, you go ahead. And so since then, tens of thousands of people have been rescued off the streets of Calcutta. And she has started facilities for lepers and for orphans and for AIDS victims. And they've spread around the world. Now they're in Mexico City and Kenya and Ethiopia and Peru, even New York City. Of course, in 1979, she won the Nobel Peace Prize. And that's when the name of Mother Teresa became synonymous with the word servanthood. Servanthood. Mother Teresa and I may view some issues of life from different theological perspectives, but I want to focus in on this broader topic tonight of servanthood. Because Mother Teresa has really intrigued the entire world, hasn't she? She's intrigued the world by showing that Christian servanthood can bring the kind of satisfaction and meaning that has eluded so many people who've been desperately seeking it in trying to serve themselves. And so I want to look at some of the rewards, the unexpected benefits that come not just from doing some good deeds occasionally, but from serving in the name of Jesus Christ. Because there is a big difference from just doing some nice things and serving in the name of Christ. I want to talk about that. One of the biggest rewards that a servant, a Christian servant like Mother Teresa might receive for her work among the poorest of the poor. The greatest of all rewards, I think, would be what Jesus would say to Mother Teresa. What would he say to her? I think his response to her can be found in the 25th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew, because I think someday this is what he may say. Jesus said, "Then I, the King, will say to those on my right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance. The kingdom is prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." Then the righteous will answer him and say, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in? Or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" And I, the King, will reply, "I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me." And I think Jesus would simply say to Mother Teresa, "Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the way that you served me as you served the poorest of the poor. Thank you for the way that when I was a leper, you washed me. Thanks for the way that you comforted me when I was dying. Thanks for the way that you cuddled me when I was an orphan. Thanks for the way that you listened to me when I was lonely. Because when you served those people, you were serving me." I mean, isn't that a mind-blowing thing to imagine that Jesus Christ, as Gary said, the ultimate servant of all, to have Jesus Christ say that to you? I mean, think of that. Think of the times in your life where you have extended grace to people who were in need. You've done it, haven't you? Of course you have. Some of you brought stuff here today. I saw as I was driving in bottles of water that people brought for the flood victims. And I just thought of that verse. When I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. Think of the times that you've served in the ministries here with the poor, in the inner city, the food pantry, whatever it is, to think of the moment of hearing Jesus say, "Thank you. Thank you for the way that you served me when I was in disguise." I mean, isn't that something that Christians long to hear? Isn't that really ultimately the finest reward that a Christian can experience for Christian servanthood? To hear those words from the mouth of Jesus. That's a great benefit. But there are some other benefits as well to authentic Christian servanthood. There really is. There's a kind of fulfillment that even a cynical newspaper man who traveled to India and went to see Mother Teresa, even the cynical newspaper man saw for himself this kind of fulfillment and satisfaction that he couldn't deny. Let me read you the words that he ended up writing. He said, "Their life is tough and austere by worldly standards," talking about Mother Teresa and her volunteers. "But I have never in my life met such delightful, happy servants, or ever seen such an atmosphere of absolute joy as they create." I mean, this is a newspaper man coming to what Kipling called the big stink of Calcutta and saying, "I see joy. I see delightful, happy people." I mean, what is the fuel that these people are running on? And where can we get some of it? Well, maybe we can get that answer if we spend a few minutes taking a look at what makes a Mother Teresa a Mother Teresa. What makes her more than just a social worker who prays from time to time? Because the thing is that, you know, Christians don't have the corner on the servanthood market, do they? I mean, people who are not Christians, they help the poor too. I mean, when I was an atheist, I gave to the United Way. I put a quarter in the Salvation Army kettle at Christmas time. I gave my old clothes, you know, to the Goodwill. I did those things. I bet there are people who have gone to the flooded area and are filling sandbags who are not Christians, and they're working right alongside of Christians. Or people who have sent relief supplies who are not Christians. I mean, there are a lot of social workers who help people, a lot of humanitarians that help people. A lot of people are into volunteerism these days. And all of that's fine, but what I want to say is there's something different about a Mother Teresa, isn't there? And I don't just mean her personally. I'm using her to sort of represent all committed Christians. I mean, there's something different about why and how an authentic Christian serves others. It isn't just a sporadic good deed here and there to sort of work off some middle-class guilt. It's a lifestyle that brings a level of satisfaction, a level of adventure, even a level of effectiveness and longevity of service that many people don't have, many other people don't enjoy. And so what I want to do, I want to spend a few minutes just quickly running through seven of the qualities that distinguish the Christian servant from the way that other people serve. In other words, what makes a Mother Teresa a Mother Teresa? And if you're a spiritual seeker here this evening, I hope that you'll listen to these qualities and think about how each one of these qualities can open up the door to the kind of joy and fulfillment that that journalist wrote about when he went to see what Mother Teresa was doing. Think about that. And if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, sort of use these qualities as a checklist to see if they're true for you. So what makes a Mother Teresa a Mother Teresa? What distinguishes Christian servanthood from the way that other people serve the poor? Well, first, Mother Teresa is not a manufacturer, but she is a distributor. See, it helped me once when somebody put this into business terms for me. She's not a manufacturer, she's a distributor. You see, for other people who serve, they're manufacturers. They manufacture compassion for the needy in the world out of whatever it is that's motivating them. They manufacture it. It may be manufactured out of the guilt that they feel over their affluence. Maybe manufactured by the pity that they feel for the poor, or maybe they have some altruistic sense that they ought to be giving something back to the world. Maybe they've got this neurotic drive to put the needs of others before their own to make them feel worthwhile. Whatever the source, they have to manufacture their compassion, and sooner or later, it's going to run out. There's a finite supply. Now, everybody, it's true, has mixed motives in terms of why they serve, but primarily, Mother Teresa is not a manufacturer, she's a distributor. What I mean by that is every morning, for about 3 hours, she gets on her knees and she connects with God through prayer. She connects with Him and she drinks in His love and His grace. And then during the day, she merely acts as a conduit to spread His compassion to people in her path who are in need. And the more that she empties herself out in serving other people, the more room there is for God then to fill her back up. You see, she's a distributor. She's a distributor of God's compassion. And the thing is about God's compassion, it's infinite. It doesn't run out. And so can you see how this keeps servanthood fresh for the long haul? Because when this is what you are, when you're a distributor, you know you can always go back and you can always reconnect with God and you can always draw down from His inexhaustible supply of compassion. She's a distributor, not a manufacturer. And then secondly, Mother Teresa isn't serving herself, she's serving God. You see, a lot of the serving that is going on these days under the name of volunteerism is really a thinly disguised form of self-promotionalism. It's really people serving themselves. Listen to what one author wrote about this trend of volunteerism. He said, there's so much to gain personally from volunteering. You feel good. You see and learn things you otherwise wouldn't have. You test your abilities. You often find yourself rubbing shoulders with pillars of the community who can help you in your business or career. Volunteerism, she wrote, can be yet another path to upward mobility. See, the problem with that is that when your main goal in serving others is really your own self-satisfaction, when you're trying to fill, that hunger in your life, You're always going to walk around wanting more. You're never going to satiate yourself. You're never going to, you know, completely fill the hunger that you have for your own self-satisfaction. But with Mother Teresa, the satisfaction she receives is a byproduct of loving God with her servanthood. Because remember, God's the one who said that whatever you do for the least among you, you're doing that for me. And so that motivates Mother Teresa because she loves God. And when she's serving other people, she sees herself as serving God. In fact, someone once said to Mother Teresa, you know, I wouldn't touch a leper for $1,000. And Mother Teresa said, well, either would I. But I would willingly tend him for the love of God. You see, it's her servanthood that knits her closer and closer to the Jesus who she's serving. And it's that intimate community with Jesus that brings her fulfillment. Third, Mother Teresa doesn't pity the people she serves, but she respects them. See, this creates a whole different dynamic. Because if a person is serving somebody else because he feels sorry for him, or because he pities them, or because there's some obligation that he feels toward him, that bleeds through in the way that he relates to the person, and the person feels devalued. And it creates a subtle barrier between the servant and the person he's serving. But on the other hand, Mother Teresa sees each person as being imprinted with the image of God. Imprinted with the image of God. And so every single individual in her eyes has infinite value. Like the song that Marta sang, in heaven's eyes, there are no losers. Because everyone's imprinted with God's image. In fact, if there were only one sinner in the world, Jesus would have gone to the cross and died for that one person. And so Mother Teresa treats the needy not with pity, but with respect and with dignity. And that takes the person out of the realm of being a case number or a client, and it opens the door to a real depth of community that can take place between the servant and the person being served. And there's fulfillment in that kind of community. What else makes Mother Teresa Mother Teresa? Well, fourth, Mother Teresa's agenda isn't her own agenda, but it's God's. And she's attuned to following God's guidance in her life. In fact, if you heard on that video, she's on a train. She hears a distinct leading that she should go to Calcutta and she should serve the poorest of the poor. And when you're following leadings from God, there's great satisfaction in knowing that you're doing exactly what God wants you to do. And you think about it, one reason that Mother Teresa has been able to persevere and to thrive during times of turbulence that other people would have just bailed out is because she's got the anchor of being firmly convinced to the depth of her soul, this is precisely what God wants me to do. He wants me here for a reason. And when you're attuned to God's guidance for your life and you're convinced of that, can you see the comfort that comes? Can you see the security that that brings you in your life? That's a great benefit. Fifth, Mother Teresa doesn't just have ability, but she has a spiritual gift. You know, all of us have a certain number of talents. We have a certain number of abilities to do things, and that can carry us a certain way. But the Bible in the New Testament says that every Christian is given one or more spiritual gifts from God. A spiritual gift is a God-given ability to serve in a way that exceeds normal, everyday, secular talents. It takes you beyond where your secular talents stop. In fact, listen to this definition of the spiritual gift of mercy. It's a divine enablement to minister cheerfully and appropriately to people who are suffering. Now, who does that sound like? That's like a one-sentence description of Mother Teresa. I mean, one reason that she's so effective and that she feels so fulfilled is because she's doing what God specifically has wired her up to do and what He has enabled her to do through the activation of her spiritual gifts through the Holy Spirit. That's another benefit, reason why she's effective, and a sense of fulfillment that she receives as well. Sixth, Mother Teresa doesn't rely on an organization, but she relies radically on God. I mean, this is what makes servanthood, the Christian life, an adventure. It really does. In fact, there's a story about Mother Teresa setting out when she was going to begin her ministry to children. And she said to her superiors, I have 3 pennies and a dream from God to build an orphanage. And the superiors kind of looked at each other and looked at her and said, well, Mother Teresa, you can't build an orphanage with 3 pennies. I mean, with 3 pennies, you could do nothing. And Mother Teresa smiled and she said, well, I know that. But with God and 3 pennies, I can do anything. And she did. And it was an adventure. It's been an adventure in the way that God has, you know, built all of her ministry all around the world. Because she's been radically dependent on Him. There are no salaries for her people. There is no church support. There is no government subsidy. It is God coming through time after time. And through the years, she's never turned away a leper. She's never, the kettle has never run dry when she's been feeding the poor. And sometimes it's been that adventure of God coming through at the last minute. In fact, she tells a story about the chairman of a large Indian corporation coming to her and offering her some property in Bombay to have. And first he asked her, he said, well, Mother, how is your work financed? And she said, well, Mr. Thomas, who sent you here? And he said, well, I felt an urge inside of me. And she said, well, other people like you come to see me and they say the same thing. So that's my budget. I mean, she tells time after time about God coming through in amazing ways. So many times, it can't be a coincidence. I remember there's one story, true story she tells about, you know, she got a phone call from one of her other co-workers in another place, and the co-worker said, I need 50,000 rupees to be able to get this orphanage started. And Mother Teresa said, I'm sorry, I just don't have the 50,000 rupees. So she hung up the phone. Almost before she got her hand off the phone, it rang again. She picked it up. He said, it was a newspaper reporter. He said, you've won a prize, an award for humanitarian service from the Philippines. She said, how much comes with it? He said, 50,000 rupees. I said, fine, I'll get back to you. Hung up, picked up the phone again. You got your orphanage. Time after time, the one day when one nun said, it's Friday, we've run out. We finally run out. We have no food for tomorrow. No food for that Friday and that Saturday. And then a truck pulled up. The guy got out of the truck and said, I don't know why, but they decided to close all the schools in Calcutta today. So somebody said, why don't you just bring the food over here? They dumped all this bread, served everybody for 2 days. Time after time. I mean, that radical dependence of God is an adventure of servanthood that you don't have when God is removed from the equation. That is a great and wonderful, mind-expanding benefit of Christian servanthood. Seventh, finally, Mother Teresa isn't just concerned about today, but she has an eye on eternity. And what is it, you know, what good is it to help a person die in comfort without ever telling him how he could be comforted by Jesus Christ all through eternity? So you see, the ultimate expression of love is to clearly communicate to someone how Jesus Christ is the only hope for heaven. And that should be the message of any authentic Christian ministry, because it's the reality that has to be told to people. And it's that very reality of heaven hanging in the balance that gives such a compelling sense of urgency to ministry, such a supreme sense of meaning and of importance of serving in the name of Christ. It's what really gives it ultimate, ultimate meaning. Now, Mother Teresa's approach is this. She says, we preach Christ without preaching, not by words, but by putting His love and our love into living action. It's a form of evangelism the Bible talks about, a servant style of evangelism. It can be very powerful as long as the message is getting through. In fact, Mother Teresa tells a story about an atheist who came to the home for the dying to just see what was going on. And he happened to arrive right after a man had been brought in from the gutters. A man had wounds on him, and there were maggots in the wounds. And so this atheist was watching as one of the volunteers was bathing this man brought in from the streets. Over a period of time, bathing. The person didn't know she was being watched. But this atheist was watching for the longest time. And then afterwards, he said to Mother Teresa, I came here godless. I came here full of hatred. But I am going full of God. because I have seen God's love in action. I have seen through the hands of that sister, through her face, through her tenderness, so full of love for that man. He said, now I believe. Another case where a Muslim cleric came in and he watched for the longest time as a volunteer was washing a leper. And afterwards he said, all these years I have believed Jesus Christ was just a prophet. But today I believe Jesus Christ is God, if He is able to give such joy to this sister, enabling her to do her work with so much love. That is amazing, isn't it? The way that authentic Christian servanthood done out of God's love and God's compassion, that it can be so powerful that just seeing it can turn an atheist to God, can turn a Muslim to Christ. I mean, that is powerful, powerful stuff. I've seen it around here when volunteers serve the needy at the food pantry or at the CARS ministry or elsewhere, and their sense of compassion and their sense of extending the grace of God in a tangible way is the trigger that starts that person investigating Jesus Christ for themselves, because the people say, I want something for my life. I want a touch of the meaning for my life that person is having. But you see, it's not just any kind of serving. I just went through 7 different ways in which Christian servanthood is different than just a nice person who goes out and does a good deed. Christian servanthood is servanthood with a difference. It's a servanthood that flows out of a rich and a real relationship with God. It's a servanthood that's dependent on Him, that's empowered by Him, that's gifted by Him, that's guided by Him. It's serving others because in their face we see a reflection of Jesus Christ. And have you ever experienced a slice of that? Have you tasted what that's like to let God be you, let you be a distributor of His grace and compassion? How do you taste it? And you buy a plane ticket and fly to Calcutta? We started out the message talking about what Jesus would say to Mother Teresa. I just want to end by asking the question, what would Mother Teresa say to you and me? What would she say to us? And I don't have to really guess about what she would say, because people have asked her this question before. And so I can read you the words that Mother Teresa would say to you and me. She says, I know you think that you should make a trip to Calcutta, but I strongly advise you to save your airfare and spend it on the poor in your own country. It's easy to love people far away. It's not always easy to love those who live right next to us. There are thousands of people dying for a piece of bread, but there are thousands more dying for a bit of love or a bit of acknowledgement. So the truth is that the worst disease today is not leprosy. It's not tuberculosis. It's being unwanted. It's being left out. It's being forgotten. The greatest scourge, she said, is to be so suffocated with things that we forget the next person. She tells a story about coming from the poverty of India to the West. And she went into a nursing home, a lot of elderly people, beautiful nursing home, very well appointed. And as she walked in, she noticed everybody was in a wheelchair turned facing the door. And so Mother Teresa said to the nurse, she said, why are all these people looking toward the door? And why aren't they smiling? Nobody's smiling. She said, I'm used to seeing smiles on all our people, even the people who are dying. What's with these people? And the nurse replied, it's like this every day. They're always hoping somebody will come and visit. She said, their loneliness is eating them up. And I think maybe if we ask the question, what would Mother Teresa say to us? I think she would ask each of us, who is it who's staring at a door waiting for a person like you or a person like me? Who's waiting? Who's staring at their door, anticipating that you or I may come? It could be someone under our own roof. It could be a son. Could be a daughter who's tired of all the surface level conversation in the house and is just aching for a parent to come and talk to them about things that matter in the soul. He's lonely for that. Could be a son. Could be an elderly parent who feels like they've kind of lived out their life and raising their kids and now they're sort of discarded. Could be the guy at work or the guy at school. It's always sort of the odd person out. You know what I mean? Like at school, the last person picked for kickball. Could be the former friend who calls you and you never return his calls anymore. Could be the immigrant who's so bewildered by the culture that his whole family is isolated and afraid and lonely. Or the widow whose sphere of relationships has shrunk down to nothing. Or the neighbor down the block who keeps, you know, the shades pulled all day long. Or the employee who you know is going through tough times and he wants to talk. Or the person in your ministry, wherever you serve in the church, who seems always to get shunted to the side. Do you know somebody who's staring at the door and is waiting for you to walk through? You know, I was thinking about this. I know somebody in my life who would want very much for me to walk through the door and say, I'm here for you. I know you think I've forgotten you, but I've remembered you now. And I think Mother Teresa would probably say, you know, think of that person and then go and practice on them. You know, practice being a distributor of God's grace. Practice honoring that person as a person who matters to God. Practice meeting a need. Practice listening to them. Listening to a person is one of the purest forms of love that anybody could express to another human being, is to listen to them. Pretend, I think she would say, pretend that you're doing it for Jesus. Because in a very real sense, that's what you're doing. And I, the king, will reply, Jesus said. I tell you the truth. Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you have done for me. Why don't we stand for closing prayer? I'm going to pray a snippet of a prayer that Mother Teresa prays every morning with her volunteers. So please bow. Lord, make me a channel of your peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love. That where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there is discord, I may bring harmony. That where there is error, that I may bring truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. That where there is sadness, I may bring joy. In Jesus' name, amen.